6 weeks we've been in the story, and it feels as though God is preparing us for something, doesn't it? We've been prepared for the crux of this story, the cross and the resurrection, and we planned it this way, had no idea how it would feel as we moved towards it. And for me, I was just telling somebody the other day, this experience has been unbelievable for me as a pastor. I hope that it's been the same for you, of preparing our souls through the Old Testament of the coming King, and then he comes and he lives his life, and we walk through his preparation for ministry, and as he comes into letting us know that he is the Son of God, that he's fully man, fully God. Last week, we talked about this question that Jesus asked his disciples, who do you say I am? And we ask you, who do you say Jesus is? Because who you say Jesus is will determine how you live your life. And so it's very, very important to distinguish in your mind and heart, who is Jesus? Fully man, fully God. He came here to rescue and save what is lost. Today, we're going to talk about the self-sacrificing nature of Christ, what he did on the cross. And it really, it comes with weight and heaviness. And this week, as we move towards Good Friday and then towards Easter, we want to feel that weight. We want to feel what it is that Christ did on the cross and why he had to do it. Why did he have to do it? The artwork this week, I just want to bring note to it. Haley Heath did this piece here. And it's significant because the buttons belong to Theodos. And those of you who know Theodos, is she lived her life in a self-sacrificing way because she knew Jesus. And that's what makes this piece significant because they belong to her. Is that right? Some of them, yeah. And so it reminds us of her, but it also reminds us of that sacrifice of living for Christ. As we talked about the story from last week's perspective, we were left at Caesarea Philippi, where Jesus asked this question of his disciples, who do you say I am? And talked about the church and Peter, the rock, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not overcome it. And the takeaway for me was that the church was to be built in the darkest corners of the world. The places where he was not known, the places where the need was the greatest. That is where the church is to be built. And so it's this idea of comfort versus sacrifice. Christ has called us to be the church and to sacrifice our lives for his kingdom and his life. But that self-sacrificing nature doesn't come easy. It's difficult. It's hard. And Jesus shows us that in this week as we study the story. There's an upper story and there's a lower story. In the lower story, Jesus tells his disciples, who are at this point very confused, Matthew 16, he tells his disciples that I'm going to be killed, and in 3 days I'm going to be risen from the grave. And Peter, the most vibrant and strong, most excited disciple that Jesus has, stands up and says, no, no, Lord, this can't be. This can't be. And Peter gets the largest rebuke from Jesus out of the scriptures. He says, get behind me, Satan. What you have in your mind is the mind of men, not of God. You don't know what God is doing here. You see, the disciples wanted something else. They wanted Jesus to be anointed as king and brought in and take the lead, take the charge, organize people to take this kingdom back, like David did. And so he goes to his transfiguration, and then after that, he rides in on a donkey into Jerusalem as king. This is the same way David would have come in as he was anointed as king. And so Jesus comes in that same way, and this is traditionally Palm Sunday, where we wave palms around, we celebrate, Hosanna, Hosanna. But we're going to move past that this week and talk about essentially the next week of his teachings, where his hardest teachings, where it's most difficult for people to understand and people to get, but he was moving towards something. He was moving towards the cross, which he knew he was going to. But Peter, I want to take a look more at Peter. As Peter gets the rebuke from Christ, "Get behind me, Satan. You don't have the things of God, but the things of man." Then Jesus says this statement that impacts us and sometimes even haunts us today. And it's the statement that Brandon read. It's in Matthew 16, verse 24 through 26. He says, If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it. What good is it for a man if he gains the whole world, yet loses his soul? A couple weeks ago, we talked about the soul. The different parts of us. We have our social context and our friends and family and the people in our lives, and then our body, and then our body inside of us is a soul, and the soul is comprised of the mind and the heart. And it's kind of a command center, a control center for those things. And as we make decisions, as we live life, that out of the soul we live. But we've got a problem here in our heart. Sin nature, sin and death. We're under a new law of sin and death from Genesis 3. So this statement, take up your cross and follow me, what does that mean? His followers, again, were thinking that he'd become king. Comes the time for Passover. The disciples are confused. Jesus is rebranding the Passover and saying, I'm the reason this Passover has been celebrated. The cup, the bread, is pointing to me. And he starts walking towards the cross with resolve. Why does he have to die? Why the cross? In the lower story, Peter, I like Peter. Why do I like Peter? Why do we like Peter? Because Peter's most like us. I mean, we can take comfort in the fact that Peter and us, we can get along. Because for Peter, it was like two steps forward, three steps back. One step forward, two steps back. Peter was always messing up things, right? I mean, you feel that? Let me just walk through a few things that Peter did. One, he was rebuked. Get behind me, Satan. The Last Supper, he says to Jesus, I will go to my death for you, Jesus. You don't have to worry about me being loyal to you. I will sacrifice my life for you. I am committed to you. And Jesus says, Peter, you're going to deny me three times. And he looks and he says, no way, not me, not me. I'll be by your side. They have a huge meal. There's four glasses of wine in the Passover meal. So you can imagine full of food and wine. They walk out of the upper room. down into the valley and up on the other side in a grove of olive trees called Gethsemane. And they're there, and Jesus pulls together some of his closest disciples, and he says, watch for me, because I'm going to, the hour's near. I'm preparing the way. He comes back, and they've fallen asleep. So right now, you haven't had a big meal or glasses of wine, but some of you are asleep. The fun thing about my job and my position is I know exactly who you are. You fall asleep because life is tough, right? You're not getting enough sleep. Life is stressful. You can see why. It's easy to fall asleep, but Peter, he falls asleep. He falls asleep in the most critical hour of the whole universe. He falls asleep. Not just once, but twice he falls asleep. Now, if you go asleep again, I will come out there and grab you by the collar. Or I'll do as my teachers did. They threw something like an eraser. I got a wallet here, so I'll tag you with the wallet. Or maybe my cell phone, and maybe it'll break and I'll get a new one. Sleep. He fell asleep. It's easy to sleep, but it's a stressful time, and man, there's a lot going on. And Peter falls asleep along with the others. But Jesus is in this Garden of Gethsemane, and in the garden, we know that Gethsemane is an olive press. It's a type of press. It presses the olive. And so they take the olives and they put them in this press. And it's got this huge stone it's very, very heavy. And it goes around and it presses the olives. And it presses out different levels. Don't go to sleep now. Different levels of the olive. And it's said that the most pure form of the olive is when it's completely pressed out is called the blood of the olive. And Jesus here, you can see him being pressed on every side, pressed by the sin of the world, by your sin, my sin, pressed down upon him so heavy that it actually says he sweats blood. He gives us an image of what's happening here. But Peter's asleep. He's like us. The reaction when he's arrested and the guards come, and what does Peter do? He takes out his sword and he takes the matters into his own hand, cuts off the ear of the soldier. And Jesus again rebukes him. He says, this is not the way to go. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword. Again, Peter, his response doesn't fit what's happening here. He's confused. He's just doing what he knows how to do. But his heart, right? I mean, he wants to be there for Jesus. But then the denial happens. They take Jesus off, and Peter gets in to just see what's happening to Jesus. But he's laying low. And they say, wait, you're one of his, aren't you? You're one of the disciples, aren't you? And he says, I'm not one of them. Not me. I don't know the man. Three times the rooster crows. And it says that Peter just gets a glimpse of Jesus looking at him. And he weeps bitterly because he knows. Weeps bitterly like a baby. Peter's like us. He wanted to be there. He wanted to be self-sacrificing. He wanted to give his life to follow Jesus, but he could not do it. Not yet. Not yet. Wanted to do it, but he could not do it yet. Now there's an upper story going on. The upper story is Jesus did it. He did do it. Self-sacrificing. He put his life out for us. fully man, fully God. So we're not just talking about Jesus as this separate person from God the Father. The Godhead is God, and Jesus is a part of that Godhead, the Trinity. And so it is God who is on the cross. This is a very big deal that God went to the cross for us. It is God who is taking on sin and death, our sin and our death. There are theories of atonement of why this cross is so important. And it gives us different angles, different theories, different angles. But I wanted to pull this in front of us so it's front and center. The different angles of looking at the cross. Because the cross is almost too much for us to wrap our heads around of what's going on here. The breadth of it is enormous. All of history hangs on it. And for us to put it into one theory or two theories, it just doesn't cut it. There are a ton of theories that bring us close to it. I just want to read a couple to you. A couple of theories that help us understand why the cross. I'm gonna read these out because the book does it justice well, and it's just easier for me to read it to you. So just listen. There are a lot of theories of the atonement which try to explain what Jesus accomplished on the cross. One popular theory is the forensic theory. Jesus took the punishment we deserve on himself so that we did not have to suffer. It is like the courtroom in which we stand before the judge, God the Father, and are found guilty and sentenced to die. And Jesus stands before the bench and asks to die in our place. The judge allows it, and we're set free. This theory is very popular and can be heard in many sermons. But there are different dimensions to what Jesus did for us. Another theory is of atonement is known as Christus Victor. Focuses on the victory of Jesus. This theory emphasizes how Jesus defended the two great foes of the human race, sin and death. Jesus lived a sinless life. He kept the law perfectly and reversed the curse of the law, which is the precursor to sin. He reversed the curse of the law, and by raising from the grave, Jesus defeated death, so that those who believe in him reign with him over sin and have been reconciled by his blood. And they also have no fear of death. Death has lost its sting, for Jesus has soundly defeated it. There are those two theories of how Jesus' death atones for our sin and brings us to God. But one of the earliest theories of atonement is sometimes referred to as the fish hook theory. It dates back to the early centuries of the church. In this explanation, Jesus baited the hook and tempted Satan with it, and Satan took it. Humanity deserved to die for their waywardness and sin, and subsequently lived under the dominion of the prince of this world, Satan. And we see this in the desert temptations, where Satan has the keys to the kingdom of earth, and he offers them to Jesus if he'd just bow down and worship. Jesus, in this theory proposes, went on to Satan and said, "Let the people be free. Take me instead." Satan hates the human race because we are God's creation and the apple of God's eye. But because God is Satan's greatest enemy, the chance to take God down through God's Son could not be resisted. Satan agreed to the bargain, and Jesus offered himself to Satan. And as Jesus hung on the cross, Satan was sure that he had won. We see the fishhook theory in C.S. Lewis's classic, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Lewis has Aslan, the great lion, who is the Christ figure, tracking the white witch, Satan, by offering himself to pay for the price of Edmund's transgressions. But the white witch does not know the deeper magic, namely, that the innocent one who dies willingly for the sake of another creates a force of energy more powerful than death. Aslan is mocked, beaten, killed. The white witch assumes she has obtained total control over Narnia. But Aslan rises from the dead, and soon the witch and all of her forces are overtaken. Though Aslan is struck down, he raises more powerful than before. So each one of these theories of atonement, and there are many more, but it gives us a different aspect or a different way, a different angle to look at the cross. But the cross is significant in what it accomplished, and there's a mystery to it. We don't understand all of it, but we do understand that Christ did something for us, and he paved the way for us. The cross is the only way to restored life. The cross is the only way to the hope of resurrection. The cross is the only way for us to be brought back into the kingdom in which God is the ruler of and has created us for. It's the only way. It's the only way of rescue is the cross. Peter could not do it. He could not follow Jesus here, but Jesus could. But he also said, where I am going, you can't follow right now. He made a way so that we could follow him. Now, I'm sure that Peter, I'm sure he's amazed by the folks throughout history, the martyrs who have given their lives for Christ, who have taken up their cross and followed him, even if it meant to their death. There's many throughout history. And after Jesus rose from the dead and ascended into heaven and sent his Spirit, Peter could also follow Jesus in a full self-sacrificing way. See, Jesus made a way for us. And through the power of who he is, he allows us to truly follow him and truly take up our cross and follow him. I'm sure Peter would be amazed. Even though it shocks us, the men and women, the Christian men and women who have been beheaded in the last 6 months for their faith, but they did not deny Christ. They had taken up their cross, and when push came to shove, they said, we're dying for the kingdom, and that is the true life that we're living for. We're dying for Christ. And that is the one who gives life. Even though you may take my life, you cannot take the life that is within, that has been given to me by the Messiah and Savior. So I'm sure that when that happens, blessed are those who are persecuted. Galatians 2:20 says this. It says, and if you can bring it up on the screen, I am crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Christ made a way. He made a way to the cross. He made a way so that we could follow him to the foot of the cross. And actually, at the foot of the cross, we are all on equal ground. Each one of us comes with a broken heart in need of salvation. Each one of us comes to the foot of the cross knowing that we are broken and ruined by sin, and that we need a restoration, and that the cross and resurrection is the answer to that. That's why he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So each one of you has a heart, right? If you don't have one, raise your hand and we'll get you one. It's important that you have one. It's important that you have one. Ushers, if you see somebody with their hands raised, make sure that you have one. It's just a small piece of paper with a cross, with a heart on it. I gave you these hearts to say that this represents your heart. And a couple weeks ago, we talked about the heart being the center of who you are. It's where your will is. It's where the very breath that God breathed into us, creating life, that is the core of who you are. And Jesus is asking for that. When he goes to the cross, he's saying, take up your cross and follow me. I'm asking for your heart. I'm asking that you would write your name on the heart and place it at the foot of what I've done. As if you're saying, I understand what you've done. And I'm asking you to apply that to my life. And I am willing to follow you. Like Peter, who said, I will follow you no matter what. Here's my heart. And we do need the power of Christ in us to even say, I submit and surrender my heart. But submitting and surrendering to Christ is the most powerful thing that you and I could do, of submitting ourselves to the authority of the one who gives authority and has taken back the keys of the kingdom and won that, and then says, all authority in heaven and earth have been given to me, therefore go and make disciples. You see, Christ has all authority. And so when we surrender our hearts and say, okay, I trust you with who I am, and I'm asking that you would live out your life through me. It's a significant step. And I'm asking you this morning that as we enter our time of sharing, that this would be the beginning parts. And we'll have some music playing just for this first 5 minutes. And then after that, I would ask that if you want to share, that you would share about some aspect about the cross, or that you would share some way that Christ is making the cross real to you, or that how it's impacted you this season, or how it's changed your life. Can we do that in our sharing time? So I'm asking that you would come forward, that you would write your name on that piece of paper. You can write it on. You don't have to write it on. You can write a message, but bring it to the foot of the cross, essentially saying that you have my heart. It belongs to you. And I will take up my cross and follow you.
Lord, you have my heart, and I will search for yours. Jesus, take my life and lead me on. Oh, Lord, you have my heart, and I will search for yours. Let me be to you a sacrifice, and I will praise you, Lord, and I will sing of love come down, and as you show your face, we'll see your glory here. Lord, you have my heart, and I will search for yours. Jesus, take my life and lead me on. Oh, Lord, you have my heart, I will search for yours. Let me be to you a sacrifice, and I will praise you, Lord, and I will sing.
Just wait on him for a sec.
I wanna see your face. I wanna know your.
precious.